Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty. We'll be taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. Hopefully we raise some questions in your mind or at least get you thinking about some things with high yields. Now, we're going to focus on wheat today, and we get a lot of questions about wheat because growers see, man, people are getting twice the yield I'm getting not that far away from me. And there are some really big differences that guys are seeing, and they're coming in surprising areas of the world too. So it's pretty fun. Had a chance a year ago to go down to New Zealand and see the world record wheat producer, Eric Watson. My goodness, it was amazing walking through those fields, seeing what he was able to do. And it wasn't on a small scale. He was doing it over a lot of acres. And I get it. You know, we all hear about yield contests and people think, well, they just had to take an acre, or they just had to take 3 or 5 or 10 acres or something like that. Now, it's a bigger area than that, and it's really impressive to see what he's doing. But here's the thing. It's something that's repeatable, and it's techniques that may be slightly different than what you're doing. At the Ag PhD Field Day now, we've had Eric raising some wheat amongst other competitors from North America, and it's just been fun because he wants to go out the lower seeding rate. He wants to do everything he can to keep the wheat short. And guys are like, wait a second, what are you doing? Trying to shorten the wheat and hardly putting any population out. And it's just been really interesting getting to know him a little bit and seeing what's happening on his farm and with other growers that are trying similar strategies. It's been pretty cool. So that's going to be interesting. We'll dig into some of the different techniques that growers are using on high yielding wheat acres. But, you know, let's just say you're not raising wheat and you say, I'm not sure if I want to, I may be interested in that a little bit, but I don't know if I want to listen for an hour about that. We're going to talk about some other things today too, but I will say this, whenever we're talking about improving profits, getting a better return on investment and controlling costs, I really like to start with managing our soils and managing our fertility, and we're going to definitely get into some of those fertility levels that we need to have to achieve certain yield goals that we're going after, and that is going to play into whatever crop you're going to raise. We're going to be concerned about getting that right nutrient mix out there so we can feed our crop properly. So as I mentioned, we'll be talking about that. We'll also be taking your questions. We've got a number of emails in. If you have a question you want to send us to us via email, it's radio@agphd.com. If you want to send soil samples in or something like that, that's a great way to do it. Otherwise, you can just call. Again, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD, so we can discuss things and you can ask questions on the fly too as we dive into, well, hey, what about this piece of information or that one? Get into a discussion today about manure management, speaking about fertility, and this is something that we try to use on our farm as often as we can, getting manure onto our fields. It's a great source of nutrients, but there certainly can be some challenges. We're seeing a lot of new products coming out in terms of managing manure and helping with things. And we've been trying several of them out, both on our farm as we're applying manure to the farm, but also with some of the livestock producers that we're working with. Products that can help control odors, can make products a little more consistent to work with, can break crust off the top of manure lagoons, those kinds of things, and also composting. And we had an interesting question come up this week from a large horse barn where they're using a lot of wood shavings and wood chips for bedding. And then obviously you've got manure that comes with that, and they're looking at a composting solution. And it's much different than what I grew up with. We grew up, Brandon and I grew up in a farrow to finish hog operation, and we also had a cow calf operation. My dad was really big into livestock and saw that as a great way to diversify on our farm, and it really served him well for many, many years. And we used a lot of straw for bedding, and that's got a high carbon to nitrogen ratio. But with manure and with added nitrogen as we were applying it out in our fields, we didn't have any problem breaking that down. When it comes to the wood shavings and wood chips especially, that's a little different story. We talk about drainage so often. We've got a bioreactor that we have at the end of some drainage tile runs at the Ag PhD Field Day site. And what a bioreactor is in this case is simply a bunch of wood chips that we're filtering tile drainage water through to try to extract any nitrogen that may be in the water coming out of the tile lines. And it's actually been great. The after effect of it is we've got virtually no nitrate in the water. I don't know how much exactly we've had in the water to begin with. It hasn't been all that much, but we are able to catch whatever excess N there is in those wood chips. This gets me back to my composting and using manure with wood chips out in fields. I think wood chips are a great way to tie up nitrogen, unfortunately. And you think about the carbon to nitrogen ratio of the straw that we used for bedding compared to the wood chips, and it's not even close. You've got so much carbon in those wood chips and not very much nitrogen. So to get that to turn, we're going to need to add nitrogen to the equation. And that's fine, because the product is actually worth something if you can get those wood chips to break down and start to release whatever is in that manure source instead of just tying up the N and having a need for a higher N addition to that in a composting situation somewhere. So it's been fun as we start looking in crop production. High yields, manure is a great component, and there are a lot of new biological type breakdown products to help with composting and also help with handling manure and controlling odors. I'd encourage you to take a look at some of those if you're in that field. Well, stay tuned. We're going to jump into some market talk right after this on Ag PhD Radio.
White mold and sudden death syndrome are two of the most important fungal diseases in soybean production today. But did you know 40 to 50 million acres in the north central region are affected annually? When every season has different disease challenges, the question becomes, how can you ensure the best start for your soybeans no matter what? The answer is Heads Up Seed Treatment. Trusted by growers across the Midwest, Heads Up offers a new mode of action to prime your beans to help fight fungal disease. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic herbicides from Atticus LLC. Tough broadleaf weeds are a hassle, but they're no match for Cavallo from Atticus. Cavallo delivers fast, contact, and residual control so your corn, soybean, and sorghum crops can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation. And patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more. Back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, we're going to be talking about tips for higher yielding wheat on today's program. And anytime that we do that and we start talking about yields, I'll get some responses from people saying, oh no, if everybody's raising 100 plus bushel wheat, what are we going to do with all the wheat? Boy, wouldn't that be a great problem for all of us to have, where we actually had more food for this world as the population grows. We're going to need more yield. Of course we are. And for your farm, you're going to need more yield this year to be more profitable. But you also have to market it well to make that money. So we've got our friend Scott Harms on with Grain PhD right now. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Darren.
All right, there's a USDA report tomorrow, but before we get into that, I want to touch on the developments this week in Iraq. Certainly, that region is not a hotbed for U.S. exports, but we saw a market sell-off on the news that the U.S. killed the commander of the Iranian forces. So what's your take on this price action?
Yeah, it was disappointing to see the price action. You know, it just seems like anytime there's any uncertainty, the first reaction is to sell the markets. And you know, just as you say, when it doesn't really impact any exports, we sell a little bit of wheat to Iraq. But I think the real reaction, the weakness in the trade was more of a correction, just a general correction in the market. You know, we had a rally of around 20 or so cents in corn and 70 to 80 cents in beans. And even though the funds are mostly neutral soybeans and they're actually still short corn, I think the initial reaction was the people that have been buying it, the speculative trade that had built up profits on that run up, they weren't going to let the rug get pulled out from underneath of them. So their first reaction is to sell it. I think you also catch farmer sales that were perhaps waiting for an opportunity here early in the year to make some sales. Once the market started giving ground, they didn't want to sit on the sidelines and let the market slip away. So selling begets selling, and then you also get, you know, once you see a big sell-off like we saw on Friday, we have a, you know, poor technical picture, and then that brings additional speculative selling. So it really, you know, I think it's a reaction that was probably not necessarily a surprise, a disappointment, because it derailed what we had was a pretty good market. But we stabilized here, recovered a little bit in the soybeans, and I think the focus, you know, is going to go very quickly back to this USDA report and what's ahead of us. It looks like perhaps things have stabilized there, and we've kind of hopefully put that behind us.
Okay, let's talk about that USDA report tomorrow. And of course, as a farmer with grain in the bins, I want to know what's going to be on that report. There's going to be a lot of information there, but the thing I'm most curious about is the final production figure for the 2019 crop. So just curious, what are the expectations in the trade, and what are your expectations coming in this report?
Yeah, the headline number is going to be yield and production number, of course. On the corn side, the average trade guess is coming in about 150 million bushel on production side, below our last estimate that we got in November. That would put yield down just less than a bushel an acre. So a modest decline. They're going to cut harvested acres probably as well. The expectation is there may be 500 million acres. In the soybean side, they're looking for a cut in production, just a very modest 38 million bushel, less than a half a bushel decline in yield going forward. We're also going to get the winter wheat seedings. We're going to be at a 100-year low in winter wheat seedings. That's not necessarily going to be a surprise, but it's going to put that focus back on the marketplace and the importance on crop conditions as we come out of dormancy this spring. But that's been built into the market a little bit on the wheat side. We've had a nice rally, about a dollar off our lows, a little over a dollar off our lows from last September. So that has been factored in. You know, I think we've been waiting for, and certainly I have been waiting for the past three trading reports, USDA reports, to see a decline in production, maybe a step towards reality, I guess, in my opinion. But we haven't seen it, and I think the market's disappointed. These analyst estimates, you can see, just continue to migrate towards the USDA estimate. They're giving ground. They're saying, you know what, looks like we're not going to get that production cut. To me, it sets up a potential for a surprise, and we're seeing only a modest decline in the yield estimate. You know, I think it could come in, you know, bushel and a half, maybe two bushel lower. That would be a real surprise. The key is getting production to drop and carry over to drop 200 million bushel to get a big move in the corn market. They could easily step in and offset any kind of production decline with a cut in exports. However, with this new trade deal that we have in front of us, perhaps the USDA punts and they could justify cutting at 150 to 100 million bushel on the export side, but maybe they'll wait a month or so, and so we get a more of an impact of this production cut hitting this month. It's not going to perhaps be offset. If that's the case, I think it sets the stage, especially with what's ahead of us, for a continued move back to the highs, maybe making new highs. But I've been looking for a production cut, and for several months, I'm not going to back off that now. And hopefully tomorrow we get what we've been looking for.
Yeah, I agree. I love that. I love the talk of, hey, let's get some reality here into these figures and get the markets moving back up. All right, Scott, you're monitoring a lot of different sources in the markets. What are some of the actions you're seeing being made in regards to this report?
Yeah, we get a lot of information. Like to tell the people I work with that I read all this stuff so that you don't have to.
That's good.
And we sort through a lot of different market opinions and try to share that as best we can with people that we work with. And, you know, it may not necessarily be what you're looking for that particular time, but maybe the next time it is. It just gives you different ideas and something to think about. There really hasn't been much on the advisor front or from analysts making recommendations at this point. I think, you know, we've moved off the lows. Everyone's waiting and hoping that we get that move higher, into better selling opportunities ahead of us. So I think overall, we're just poised for a move higher. There are these short dated options. I had recommendations recently buying options. If you're sitting on bushels and you're maybe underpriced, and not necessarily comfortable and fearful of a negative crop report, they have February short-dated options. They expire next Friday. We had some people buying those. A recommendation came out to buy those. You're not going to spend a lot of money because it's a real short-term coverage. The problem is it's a very popular strategy to buy put protection for this short-term to just get you through the report. So it inflates the price of those options. You are going to have to bid up. If you get a subtle move, that volatility is going to come out of the options, and it's hard to make money on them. You need a big move, so it can provide some comfort, but it's not perfect. The other strategy would be to put on either defensive hedges with stops above recent highs, or put in stops below the market to catch it. We're fearful. If there's a fear out there, it's a fear that the USDA doesn't follow through with the production cut, and we go back and we test the lows. But I don't anticipate that happening, but not a lot going on. But I think there are some people with some defensive strategies that have been employed. You know, I'm just willing to be patient.
Well, and that's the whole thing, because the question is, what will be next for these markets once tomorrow's report's out of the way?
Yeah, we'll trade the USDA report. Because it's a Friday, it tends to get muted a little bit. Because we'll have 2 days off, and then we'll open up the markets again Sunday night. But we'll trade it for a few days, most likely, especially if there's a major surprise. But as we get back to the trade next week, all eyes will be on the signing of the trade deal. It's the 15th. I think that's next Wednesday. So it looks like, although that's been talked about and the trade deal was announced a month ago, there's been so much skepticism in the marketplace as to whether the deal will get done and back and forth. I still think there is skepticism. So once we see the ink on the paper, we don't even have to see what the details are. I don't think we may not see what the actual details are, but if we see ink on paper, I think that is going to provide a little bit of a reaction and take, you know, a little bit of that negativity and skepticism away from the market and allow people that want to own it from a speculative side or index funds stepping in and owning it, they feel more confident owning it if that's the case. So that's going to be a feature. And then once we get the actual sales, that'll be a boost. And then we'll be watching South American weather, of course.
Yeah, always lots going on in the markets. That's why we love having Scott Harms on with Grain PhD. And, of course, you can get all the information you need at grainphd.com. Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Have a great day.
All right, we'll get back to talking about high-yielding wheat coming up right after this.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run fans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. Plus, the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. Our exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
As your corn crop grows and the ear begins to form, potassium is at a high demand, almost as high as nitrogen. The same is true for soybeans, with similar high demands of potassium during pod fill. Don't fall behind. Ensure your crop is getting its potassium with Catalyst. Catalyst by Actagro has been shown to be the best at entering the leaf when compared to other leading potassium products. Visit k-supercharged.com for more information.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I am excited about today's show. We're going to talk about tips for higher yields in wheat. And my dad always told me when I was growing up, he said, Darren, if you're the smartest person in the room, we're in trouble. And I kind of thought, wait a second, is he knocking me saying I'm not that smart? And what I realized is that wasn't what he was saying, although he may have laughed at the suggestion of that. But what he was saying is, find people that are even smarter than you to help you out and help you increase your yield levels. Well, our wheat's pretty good. It's not bad at all, but man, Mark's getting about twice as much as us. So we thought, why not call Mark in Colorado and see what's going on? Mark, how are you doing today?
Well, not too bad. I'm sure hoping that you don't think I'm the smartest person in the room, because I can assure you I'm not.
Well, hey, you can't be too humble here. I mean, you crushed it. You crushed over 200 bushel wheat. That's awesome.
Well, you've got to have Mother Nature on your side. And I tell a lot of people this from 2018, when we had 11 hailstorms on our farm, we averaged 44 bushel irrigated wheat.
So, wow.
We're really pleased with what turned out last year, and you've got to have Mother Nature on your side.
Yeah, there's no question about it. If you have the opportunity with weather, with sunlight and warmth and everything that you need for that crop to grow, it's a huge advantage. How do you set the table for that? Where do you guys start with population? Is there a number of tillers that you're trying to shoot for, or where do you begin?
You know, it really begins on the seed side of things, and I can't stress that enough. There's a good variety for every acre out there, I believe. And you really got to do your homework on the seed side of things. And then I really believe in strong in seed applied technologies, making sure that you got a good seed treatment on there going out to the field to limit yourself on risk. And so our populations kind of bounce all over the place. It depends a lot on the variety that you choose. Is it a high tillering variety? Is it something that's going to have some straw strength behind it? But at the end of the day, we match our populations to the variety, and we try to shoot for, our goal is to shoot for about 750 heads per square yard.
Okay, 750. Yeah, it's, I think here's one of the things that a lot of times farmers that we talk to get caught up in is, well, I need to do this or that to try and make it work. But let's just break this yield down. And you talk 750 heads per square yard. If you can get that, and now you can do everything to plump those kernels up that's possible and keep them healthy, you really got some yield there at 750. If you can hit that, is that what you did this year, or have you done better than this?
You know, we've actually had head counts higher than that, but it actually hurt us in yield. We grew a lot of straw. We grew a lot of foliage. Our berry counts per head were actually lower at, say, like a 900 head count per square yard. So we kind of backed our populations off or chose a variety that just didn't over-tiller. And that's what we had this year with the West Red variety that we took to the field. It's not one that's going to push a lot of tillers. And so we wanted to bump our population so we could kind of hit that goal of around 750 heads per yard.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I know talking with the world record growers, they're very concerned about how many heads they're going to have per square meter or per square yard, depending on where you're at and what your system that you're using is. But they're looking at varieties that tiller quite a bit. And I thought that was very interesting. They had some varieties they could push 30 tillers on if they gave them enough space. And they're like, yeah, we don't want that. But there's kind of a balance there. And I like that you're finding that. You got a variety that doesn't tiller much. So, okay, we just need to put a few more seeds out there. And you mentioned the seed treat. And I think that one's really interesting, too, because it makes that heads per square yard count so much more predictable when you know, hey, I'm going to have 99% of my seed or 98% of my seed is going to make it. That's got to be a good thing, too.
It is, and we want a very consistent stand out there. And we've quite frankly learned a lot from the different high-yield growers like Randy Dowdy on the corn side and have tried to take that and say, well, how do we apply that to wheat? And so we want a very uniform stand out there. We want a very dense stand out there. And then if we can accomplish that, we'll manage out of that. Here in eastern Colorado, our winter months are really challenging. They can be very harsh, and sometimes we lose our stand due to winter hail. So that's why we've kind of chosen the approach of let's take a variety that just doesn't tiller very much and cause it to produce a lot of heads through population so we can kind of try to preserve that stand.
Yeah, and you mentioned winter kill, and I think that plant health is just so critical to give yourself the best chance of surviving, because you're right, you're not in a garden spot necessarily where you're at. You can have some pretty tough conditions.
Well, and we've seen it time and time again, and what's kind of tricking us a little bit, or at least has caused me to scratch my head a little bit, is sometimes we confuse winter kill with things like fusarium. And so that's why it's so key for us to go out with a really good seed applied technology out into the field to just limit risk. And if we can plant a little bit earlier, if we can get good stand establishment, good root growth early, we really set the stage to do some really cool things in the field.
You know, I'm just thinking about a number of things that you've talked about today. And we're talking with Mark in Colorado for anyone who's just tuning in. And yes, Mark's smoking us on yield, and that we aren't even close. So we're trying to learn something here for our own farm as well. Just like you said, Mark, you're listening to other growers. And I think that's one of the real keys is, guess what? We need to talk to each other. We need to communicate a little bit and find out, you know, hey, there's something that you're doing that I can pick up for my operation. So for the guy that says, well, we only raise 50 or 60 bushel wheat on our farm in eastern Montana, what are some of the things that you'd say, hold true whether in that 50, 60 bushel dryland wheat acre or you're in the 200 plus bushel irrigated acre in Colorado?
Well, you really got to know your farm first and foremost, and nobody knows that better than the farmer that's on the land. And I think it starts with getting inside the soil, having a really good soil test, knowing what your environment can yield. I can tell you when we started into the irrigated wheat side of things 15, 20 years ago, we didn't think we could grow 200 bushel wheat. But as you start growing 130, 140, 150, and you start getting some really good information from other growers from outside the country, you start building your program around it and doing things different. Our history on this farm is in the produce side. We grew a lot of onions here in northeastern Colorado, and so we adopted a lot of those practices from growing onions and tried to create an environment where wheat could be successful. But like I said early on, Darren, if Mother Nature's not on your side, you can make all the right moves in the field and it just still won't produce.
So is crop rotation a big part of this too? Or, you know, you've had onions out there before. Maybe that's it. We haven't grown onions before, Mark. Is that our secret or is there a different crop rotation you really like to put in there with high yielding wheat?
Well, if you want to pay a lot of tuition, become an onion grower, because you will. But I would tell you rotation is fundamentally key, and you've got to have a lot of things going in the right direction before you start growing, you know, 150, 160 bushel wheat. You got to have your fertility in balance. And I think you and Brian have done a really good job of at least teaching us on this farm that there's more to the equation than N, P, and K. You've got to have a lot of microbial activity going on in the soil, and you got to think a little bit just deeper than putting all your nitrogen out, planting a crop, and hoping for the best. One of the things that we've probably done most in our irrigated operation is try to influence test weight. And so often we'll push, you know, 66, 67 pound test weights coming out of the field. And you do that through fertility and timing. And if you're successful in that, good things can happen.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I love just the attention to detail, looking at, you know, this isn't going to happen overnight. So it isn't that I just double my fertility use and everything's going to work out just great. And then, just building it up and continuing to learn. I think it's just awesome. Mark, congratulations to you and your farm operation. What an awesome yield you pulled off this year. Yes, the weather worked, but it's the 10 or 20 years of learning that you did that got you here. Congratulations. Best of luck to you here going into 2020.
Well, and we really appreciate that. We're kind of humbled by everything that's taken place this year, but we're looking to always learn more for sure.
Yep, we are too. That's why we're happy to have growers like Mark on here today. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Using N-Serve Nitrogen Stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show NSERV delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and NSERV is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from Hypro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. If you're listening along, you say, boy, I wonder if you could explain something a little more, or hey, I got thinking about something else. That's why we do the show. We're just hoping we can help get your mind going on a couple different things for your farm. It's easy to get caught up in that, well, we'll just keep doing things the same. And a famous line that I heard growing up, well, this is just how we do things. I don't know. I shouldn't say ever. There's very few practices that I'd say, oh yeah, we always want to do it exactly the same. But there's always room for growth with just about everything. And I just want to challenge you, commit on your farm this year to doing one or two things differently. And it's really fun. It makes it fun farming on our farm because we're always looking for, well, what can we do a little bit differently on our nitrogen timing? We were just talking with Mark out in Colorado, and he said pushing cruise control and just saying, well, I'm going to dump all my N out there at planting. I'm going to drop seed in the ground and forget about it. That we know that doesn't work. So exactly when should we do the timing on an additional nitrogen application? What amount should we be putting on? You know, here are some things that you can adjust a little bit as you start moving up in yield. You can figure out what works for your farm, what works for your operation, and for the manpower you have and so forth. Real happy to have Rick on with us right now, another high-yielding grower, another yield champ, farms in the state of Idaho. Rick, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
You know, Rick, I've got like this big anchor attached to my leg. I got a farm with my brother. Boy, wouldn't it be nice if I could just come farm with you in Idaho instead. I'm sure it'd be much better, right? No challenges out there at all.
Oh, no. Everything's just rosy here. So.
You know, it's interesting.
I used to farm with my family too, and so I know how that farming with family goes.
There are a lot of pluses. Don't let me fool you. There's a lot of good things too, in addition to getting a little grief from time to time. But you know, Mark made a comment. He said his high yields that he had in Colorado this year, he said we just had good weather for it. That really helped, but there's certainly a lot of other decisions along the way that have to go into this. And we just started with seed variety. What do you look for in seed varieties that you're planting?
Well, I've been working with now it's called Anderson Trade Group, our local co-op or our local grain receiving station, and they actually work with a couple different seed companies, Syngenta and Westbred, so basically I'm shooting for high yielder, and I'm a seed grower. I grow seed for them. And so basically it's what seed that they need in demand, but the varieties now are just so much better than they have been in the past, I would say.
Oh, no question about it. And I know you talk about Westbred, and they've got a national breeding center just right close to where you farm, too. I would assume that has to help with good varieties for your area.
And it does. And when I placed, I don't know, 3 years ago or 4 years ago, I was with Westbred at that time. And it just kind of depends on what variety of seed that they need here, and is kind of what I grow. I've grown this variety. Ovation is the variety. I guess that's public knowledge. And I've been growing it for probably 4 or 5 years, as well as some of the Westbred stuff. And they just have really good quality grain.
Hey, you know, that brings up a good point. So last year I had a chance to be down in New Zealand with the world record wheat grower, Eric Watson, and he was planting the same variety he'd planted for a number of years as well. And he said, you know, it's not just that I have to find this hot new variety, and that's what's holding me back on yield. He said, I know I can get more out of the varieties that I'm raising. So what are some of the things that you're doing to coax that kind of yield out of it? Is the irrigation timing just a real critical thing, or is it about delivering fertility at the right time?
I think a lot of it's fertility. So I was in behind spuds. I leased some ground out to a good friend of mine that rotates spuds in my rotation, and they always fertilize real heavily for potatoes, and so they always leave me a good base. And actually, this is just a really good farm here. The old timers, the rumor said this place had some of the tallest sagebrush there was when they broke out the area, and it's just really good soil. And I'm on a soil conservation district, and I do cover crops, and I'm trying to take care of my soil. I'm big on trying to increase our organic matter, just as you guys talk about all the time. And so I think a lot of it's fertility. Obviously, the environment, the weather we had, just like you said, was probably the biggest part of it.
Yeah, and we did not have the weather this year for good crops, so I certainly know what happens when you don't get that kind of weather either. You know, as you look at this, why did you get involved in yield contests? Obviously, you knew you had some high yield there, but I talked to guys that aren't in yield contests that are doing quite well too, and some say, I don't know if I want the hassle, and others are like, well, hey, we put in all this work. It'd be kind of fun to see what we could do. What's your reason?
Right. Well, the first time I did it, it was actually my seed field man. He said, you know, they're just starting this contest. We ought to get involved. And so he kind of got into it. And then my wife, she does all the paperwork. And I think she kind of figured the only way she was going to get a vacation is if she filled out the application and we won.
Come on, Rick. You got to spring for a vacation now and then.
It's kind of fun to, you know, that's part of farming, trying to increase production. And so it's just kind of fun to compete. And I know there was guys around me that had just as good a grain. So you're right. There's guys all over that are growing high yielding grains.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's been fun about this too, when we look at all the different contests that are out there, is the side benefit that people end up talking about is they get to meet so many other good yielding growers from different areas, and it's just fun to share knowledge. Like here, we just had Mark on in Colorado. We're never going to be competing against Mark for anything. I mean, we're not going to try and buy land across the road from Mark or something like that. And so Mark feels a lot more comfortable. Hey, yeah, we can talk about this because I don't farm in South Dakota. You don't farm in Colorado. What the heck? But how much happens just with your neighbors in Idaho? Is it more open there? Are guys more open to talk about some of these things, or is it still pretty competitive?
No, I think it's pretty open. I think we get together as neighbors and talk about what we're doing, and I think we work together pretty well here. So I just think it just works out pretty good.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It is. It's such a nice area too, where you farm. I've gotten to travel through Idaho quite a few times, and yeah, there's some nice stuff there, no doubt about it. And certainly a lot of agriculture, a lot of dairies, a lot of things happening in your area. So there's good opportunities for guys to do things with crop rotation. What do you rotate in with this, Rick? What's your strategy? You guys a 2-year rotation, a 3-year rotation? What do you do?
You know, I don't have a set rotation. My spud guy comes in every 4 to 5 years, and then I'm basically corn, either chopping corn, silage corn, or grain corn, and then I get wheat in my rotation.
Okay.
Somewhere, and like I said, I'm all seed wheat. I grow pretty much primarily all seed now. So that helps too with, you
absolutely
know, with the price of commodities now and our struggle, you know, every dollar extra we can make is a benefit. And so that's kind of the road I take.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, well, it's an awfully good road, Rick, when it's taking you to the kind of yield levels you guys are pulling. Well, hey, we're up against a break here, Rick, but I really appreciate having you on today. Thanks for what you do, and good luck heading into 2020. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's Bellum herbicide.com.
Maximize your flexibility and control the toughest broadleaf weeds and grasses with Anthem Max herbicide from FMC. With a wide application window in both corn and soybeans, and with an easy-to-tank mix formulation, Anthem Max is ready to go when you are. Visit FMCAgUS.com or ask your FMC retailer about Anthem Max herbicide. Always read and follow all label directions and precautions for use. FMC and Anthem are trademarks of FMC Corporation or an affiliate.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
You know, a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. We're talking about high yielding wheat. It's been really fun. I've had some really nice growers on that were good enough to share some of the things they're doing on their farms. These guys are yield champs. They're raising tons of yield, and they're making money doing it. And I thought Rick in Idaho, it was just great that he was talking about, you know, I got to do everything I can to make an extra buck here to keep this thing going. It's important, and they got some different choices of crops they grow in that particular area. I just thought that was interesting. I'd love to spend more time in Idaho. Hope to again this summer and just learn more about what the guys are doing there. Another grower I love talking to is Lee. He's from South Dakota. Raises a lot of high-yielding crops, wheat being one of them. Lee, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate having you on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, when I get thinking about this, profitability versus other crops, and one of our friends, Chad, up in North Dakota, just sent an email, and he said, I'm just looking at, and he had a whole list of crops. Goodness, he had almost 10 different crops here that he could raise, and he was just looking at what the profitability is amongst all of those. How many different crops do you consider as potential, big acre crops for your farm?
In our area, there'd be up to five that we would, feel very comfortable focusing on over a larger scale.
Yeah. And, when we look at next year, how does wheat look right now for you? Does it look like a crop that a guy could make some money on?
Absolutely. If we manage it, we'll get higher yields. And even with low prices, it pencils out. And if prices come up, then it's a definite winner. Then it can actually probably be about the best crop that we could raise.
Yeah, I think it's fun because I'll talk to growers in different areas that they'll say, oh, nope, can't make any money raising wheat. And the next guy I talked to is like, I don't know what he was talking about. This one could be pretty good. But I guess it kind of depends on where you're at for yield and what you can do and how efficient you can get. When you look at raising wheat, you've spent some time with some of these yield champs and world record growers. What are some of the tips that you've taken from them and brought back home into South Dakota? You say, man, nobody around here does that, but by golly, that works.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter if it's Oklahoma, New Zealand, or South Dakota. Management always pays. Focus on your fundamentals, good fertility program. When it comes to disease control, you can't play catch up. You have to do your fungicides. You have to be timely and just focus on a good management program. That's the big key.
How about the stand? And I know Mark had made a comment about just listening to Randy Dowdy talking about corn and soybeans that he raises and trying to get every seed out of the ground at the same time. How about in wheat? Can a guy do it in wheat? And are there some things that you see, ooh, here's a common mistake that leads to an uneven looking stand?
One is, as we're all raising higher yields and then and being in a no-till program, you don't want to go out and seed too early in the morning or too late at night. Hairpinning will kill your stand. We're out checking, we wait in the morning till we know we can go and get it into the ground. You could be pulling it over it and not get out. And if you're not looking and checking, it looks fine from the tractor, but you've just taken any chance of a good yield right out of the equation, right at seeding. So we're always fanatical about getting that seed into the ground, getting that seed to soil contact. Don't get it hairpinned and caught in the trash.
Yeah, and I respect you saying that too, because I remember back in the early 1990s, I was out at Francis Child's farm in Iowa, and Francis was getting tremendous corn yields, dry land, and he didn't have a huge amount of acres. And it was kind of an advantage because he could spend more time doing it. You got a lot of acres to get over, and you got, as you mentioned, maybe four or five crops, depending on the year that you got to put in. You don't have a lot of time, but it must be super important to you if you're willing to slow down and like you say, even limit your hours of planting.
It always pays to do it right because there's things that you don't get a second chance on. And if you don't establish that crop right, that first time you're out seeding, there's nothing that you can do in management, fertility, chemistry, anything to get that back. That's already been lost.
When I think about where you farm, it's normally hot and dry. And you're doing this without, not in the easiest place in the world to farm. How do you do that? How do you set the table for that when you know you're probably going to have to face a lot of heat and dry weather coming forward? Is it delivering fertility a little bit earlier than you normally would just to be safe? Or what are some of the things you do to kind of drought-proof yourself?
We're big believers in biologicals in our seed treatment. We're chemistry and biology. We never plant a naked seed on any crop. That way our wheat is going to get a lot better establishment and we can take drier periods. Fertility, we try to have some flexibility. If we can, we're going early, but if we get some early snows and it keeps us out of the field, we'll go in the spring when everything greens back up and start applying fertilizer. So fertilizer could go on over a five-month period.
How did you turn out this fall? What was yours like? I know you had some moisture during the year. Was it a decent fall to get things done?
It was a challenge. It was a fight, but we came through it. We got some wheat in the ground, not the acres we wanted. We were excessively wet this year, second year in a row, which we're not used to. And then row crops, we came out with some very good row crops. And all the management details that we focused on that we've even things that we've learned from our wheat that we applied to our row crops really helped us come through with a lot better crop this year.
You know, with all the rain that you did have the last couple of years, did you have to change that fungicide program up you were talking about with disease control earlier? Was it much different or was it just staying the course and making sure you're out in front of things?
Just staying the course, we have a pretty aggressive program. We believe in keeping our wheat clean. It always pays. And it meant that we just had no room for error in these wet years. We actually had to bring in planes because it was too wet to run our ground rigs. So we shifted gears because that timing was critical.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I thought, man, how did you guys even get through the fields this year? But that answers that question. If you could fly stuff on, it gave you a good jump. And what about bugs then? Were bugs worse on this year or was it not as bad as a dry year?
We were actually anticipating a lot of insect issues. We had a lot of south winds in the spring, and they didn't seem to materialize. It kind of surprised us.
Yeah, well, I guess you had to have some breaks. It wasn't exactly an easy year to farm where you're at. We're talking with Lee in South Dakota, and Lee's been really generous with us at the Ag PhD Field Day and other events that we've done too, helping us out and giving other growers tips. Lee, you're always so generous. Really appreciate having you on today, and good luck here going into 2020.
Thank you.
You know, we're talking about high-yielding wheat, and I hope you didn't think the conversation was just about wheat. I thought there were so many good points there that Lee made and a number of other growers. The fungicide program, this is something I was just chatting with Rob Fritz, who's on the show from time to time this morning, about our fungicide program. We were specifically talking about corn this morning, but a lot of the same things that Lee was talking about there. You've got to be aggressive. You've got to be early. And we noticed last year when there were a lot of troubles in corn fields, the varieties that were clean, where we didn't see a lot of lesions on the leaves or we didn't see any issues with the root system, man, they yielded more. And sometimes it was varieties we didn't expect. It's like, well, you know, that's an okay variety, but it's not usually a plot winner for us. But on a year like last year where we had just constant rainfall, the fungicide use was really important and varietal tolerance to certain diseases is really critical too. I know talking with Rick from Idaho earlier and he's right by where Westbred has got their major breeding station for the country. He said, man, I'm just really impressed with some of the advancements that all the wheat breeders are making, coming with better varieties for us, with better tolerance to things like stripe rust. And that's been exciting. So we're getting better varieties. We're seeing a lot more farmers starting to manage fertility really closely to try to be efficient with all the dollars that are going out there. And boy, it's really paying. I want to say thanks to all those high yield growers that we had on the show today. All those guys are knocking it out of the park for yield. And from what I know of those guys, they're all pretty generous with the information and what's going on and talking to neighbors and trying to help other guys too. I think that's what it's all about, that we get these blessings in our life and it's only a blessing when we can share it with others too. Thanks for listening to our show today. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.